This is WHFR Dearborn. And welcome to another edition of Dearborn Heights News and Views. All the latest and in-depth information about what's going on in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. And now, here's your host, Ned Apigian.
Thank you, Jay. I've been gone a while, but I'm back. And hopefully everybody's missed me. But back to our program for today. Today we have a special guest from the city of Dearborn Heights, and his name is Thomas Roscoe. Mr. Roscoe, and we're going to refer to him as Tom from now on, is the assistant administrator of TIFA. TIFA is the Tax Increment Finance Authority. And what we're going to do today is, after we find out something about Tom, and you'll find out about his background, we're going to find out what on earth is the Tax Increment Finance Authority and how important it is to us. And all of us usually refer to it as the TIFA. Next, Tom is also the assistant administrator of the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority, which we never refer to by its acronym, but we'll get into that later. The important thing is, something I didn't know until I got here, was we're also going to give a definition to the Downtown Development Authorities, which most of you may have heard of in the past. And the previous two, the TIFA and the Brownfield Redevelopment Authorities, are post the Downtown Development Authority, and they are originated after. Their origination is after. Tom, welcome to the show, and I hope everybody listens very carefully, because there's a lot of things that we do under the name of the TIFA and the Brownfield, and when we get to it, you're going to explain that, so you better listen very carefully. Tom, tell us something about yourself, where you were born, raised, your education. Are you a local boy or somebody that came here like me?
Well, thanks for having me today. I'm almost born here, almost born and raised. I was born actually in Minnesota, but moved here with my family when I was 2, so lived in Dearborn Heights ever since, and went to Welliver School, for those people who still remember that, on Ford Road, where Target is now. And I went there for kindergarten, and then went to Divine Child in Dearborn for grade school and high school. When I graduated there, I went to the University of Michigan in Dearborn here, and went there, got a degree in business. At first, I was thinking accounting, but then as I was getting into it, I didn't really care for that, and kind of found my way into more of like marketing, that kind of background. So focused on that with enough credits for a minor in history, but you know, that goes where they want you to have certain things. So I didn't quite get the history minor, but had more than enough for it. So
otherwise you would have been a teacher.
No, but just an interest in history, which I think you know, something we need to always keep in mind. Things that happened in the past going into the future.
What'd you do for work before you got involved with the city of Dearborn Heights?
Well, kind of did a few things when I was in school doing, you know, the part-time thing with, actually started in high school working at Audette Office Supply on Michigan Avenue. Worked there, officially there for stock, but filled in with everything else. You know, being a small family-owned business, you kind of do a little of everything.
And Tom the typewriter man. Right? Was his name Tom, one of the owners, or Bob? Bob was his name.
Yep. So, you know, helping the sales, help with deliveries, help wherever, you know, needed to be. So I worked there a couple of years, and then worked for a small bookstore up in Livonia, book and gift store, worked with their website back in the time when websites were still kind of fresh in the late 90s, you know, everybody was in a rush to do a website, so helped them out with that and did some other retail here and there. And then worked for 5 years for a nonprofit group as an administrator there. And then I took a job in Ohio. A friend of mine has a company doing criminal background investigation work. Like when you go and do criminal background stuff online, those websites don't do any of the work. They farm it out
to
people.
We pay for it now, I think, with all our employees.
Yeah.
Maybe a company you used to work with.
Yeah, well, he only does the state of Ohio. You have to know how to go through all the court dockets in 88 counties throughout the state of Ohio. So he wanted me to come down and work for him, so I gave it a shot, went down there, but I just I couldn't get used to Ohio.
What'd you do after that?
So, well, I ended up coming back after a year. I gave it a year, but I was coming back up here almost every weekend. So I thought, no, Detroit's where I want to be, the Metro Detroit area. So I came back here and took some classes when I first came back and was looking for somewhere to work, and then got a call from the administrator of the TIF, Carmen Oliverio, who I had applied for something else with the city. I forgot what it was. They were hiring for something. I thought, well, I'm taking these classes, let me apply for something with the city. And he found my resume on file and called me in for an interview and started working there part-time. And after a couple of years, moved into a full-time position.
Carmen is the chief muck-a-muck of both of these things we have. He's always reluctant to come on, so we had to use his assistant because Carmen wouldn't come. Long-time association with the city after his retirement, and is on the director of these two boards.
Which is a huge help. We have, it's amazing the amount of institutional knowledge we have in the office. You know, going back to Carmen's been with the city since the early 70s. So anything that's, any question that comes up about anything in the past, we've got the answer in the office. So it's always, right. Always good to have that.
Okay, you joined the city when? As a part-time employee?
I came in 2008, part-time. Mm-hmm.
And 2008, that's... and you're now a full-time employee of the city since...
Oh, since about 2011.
2011.
Yeah, the TIFA decided to look for an assistant administrator because Carmen, our administrator, he's part-time as the administrator. He had retired from the city back in 2003, and they asked him to stay on with TIFA for a short while, and the short while turned into a little longer while, and then a little longer while, and so he decided to look for, you know, an assistant.
So you're virtually doing the same thing under Carmen for about 3 years part-time and about 3 years full-time.
Pretty much, yeah.
Nothing much has changed. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be a long-term city employee and a beneficiary of our retirement plan, hopefully, right?
Well, we never know the future, but...
Nowadays, you can't find retirement plans. You better make it, take advantage of it. Before we do anything else, we go into, I'd like for you to define the Downtown Development Authorities, a little history about that before we finish phase one. At the quarter past the hour, we'll have our standard station ID, and then we'll go into the TIFAs and the Brownfield and our second quarter of the program. Mm-hmm. Tell our audience the origin of Downtown Development Authorities, and why we don't have one is because we don't have a downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, in the state of Michigan, and I believe it was 1975, the state legislature created the Downtown Development Authority Act, which is the first. I believe it was the first use of TIF funding, tax increment financing, which is a financing mechanism, so to say, of how to finance things. That act created the opportunity for downtowns, downtown areas that are defined according to the act in a certain way, allowed them the chance to take certain increment revenue increases, like...
From commercial establishments because they deal with downtowns, or residential as well?
Well, everything within the defined boundaries. So if there happens to be residential in the downtown,
right.
Then what it does is say the property value is 1 year, the tax income is $1 million, say, just throwing out a round number.
So in 1975, it's not older than that.
Right.
It's not ancient history.
In the state of Michigan.
In the state of Michigan.
Right.
Is there any federal assistance to the DDAs? Because that's the grandfather of the two we want to talk about.
Oh, no, no. What it is it's the funding mechanism in that.
So it's because of the funding mechanism comes from local taxes.
Right.
Okay. So who determines the boundaries, which are very important, of these?
Well, the...
The local business people come up and they form a board and they say, this is the boundary.
No, for a DDA, the city has the impetus to create it. And what they do is they have to have hearings. They have to have public hearings for the public input. They invite all the taxing jurisdictions there to give their say.
So in long and short, the city, either the council with some public involvement, determines the map?
Yeah, they come up with it and then they present it to the state for approval. So there's a few layers of approval there.
There you go.
And TIFAs operate generally similar.
Same way.
Similar.
Mm-hmm. So the percentage of the tax increment that these various authorities use, are they the same for every one or are they different?
Well, what it does is it takes...
I'm just wondering...
Yeah, it takes the increase. Say in a certain year, it's $1 million income from taxes. And the next year...
So it's
year,
all... It's really 100% of the increase.
Based on the base year.
So there's no difference. So they all work the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They take 100% of the increment. Okay, so... presumably, people that do that for downtown redevelopment is to redevelop the downtowns.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get into the definition of the TIFA and the brownfield, they work exactly the same.
Similarly. There's little nuances here and there that are different because of downtown versus.
Can you think of a nuance for the DDA that's different than the other two? Because we're going to concentrate on them.
DDAs are limited usually in their plans to scope having to do with retail and commercial things, whereas the TIFAs differ in that they reach a little more into the neighborhoods, the communities, because of where they are.
Just a question from the peanut gallery here, Jay Koronik, station advisor, helping out with the show. But to be clear, the state of Michigan then passed these laws allowing DDAs and TIFAs as a way to allow basically these city entities to tax more than they normally would, but in very restricted ways, supposedly for the special good of these areas.
No,
it's not more.
Right. That's a lot of people kind of have that misconception. It's not.
I'm glad I cleared it up then.
Yeah. It's what it is basically it allows the local area, the defined district, to keep the increases in their revenues rather than, you know, if they do things to improve the area and more tax money is generated, they're able to take that and reinvest it into the area rather than it be sent to Lansing or the county spend somewhere else.
Keep it more local then.
The best way to think about it is in terms of residences, it's easier. As your tax goes from $500 to $550, the authority keeps the increment of the $50 for its own use. So it's only the increment they keep. The state presumably replaces the increment that the school district would lose.
Oh.
So when they say it costs us nothing, I always said, well, who makes up the difference?
Right.
Well, the state makes up the difference, but in the end, we all have to pay state taxes in order to make up the money the state pays. So it's a hands up for the DDAs and the TIFAs. And then the big advantages are the people that have the foresight to do that because they get extra money to redevelop things, which comes from school tax.
In the beginning it was school taxes, but then they eliminated school taxes from being captured. So there is no longer
school
tax.
That's why I said it's the best way to explain it was in for school taxes, because the school districts got cheated out of the extra money. Now, if you want to explain where that's coming from now, it's great before we have our
break. The school taxes are exempt. They took away the school tax portion of that, so you can't capture the school tax.
Okay, what are they capturing? The
property tax, just the regular
Robbery property tax.
Your millages, they're all included there.
And I assume
not income tax.
No.
City income taxes.
It's all based on the property taxes.
Taxes. Millages excluded, or they're included?
Well,
so
millages,
if they take what the millages are there for, they're taking millage money.
Well, millages, it depends. When they set up the entity, like the TIFA or the DDA, all the taxing jurisdictions are given notice and have the opportunity to be requested to be exempted from it. If they take that up or not, that's up to them. Mostly, they don't object to it. They haven't, objected to it. So, for the most part, they are collected, but some aren't. Some are left alone.
What do they call this? You exempting yourself from the increment taken away?
Exemption? I don't know.
Anyway, I think we've passed the quarter point on our program, and I think maybe we need to have a PSA and think about what we're going to do on phase two of our program today.
I'm sure we already have a good idea about that.
Yeah.
I need to say that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves that you're listening to. You're listening to Dearborn Heights News and Views with Ned and his guest Tom Roscoe today. This show has been pre-recorded for your listening enjoyment, and it is going to be podcast too from our website, WHFR.FM.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years, we're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places. The places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
It's Dearborn Heights News and Views, and now back to your host, Ned Apigian.
Well, thanks much, and we have our guest here, Tom Roscoe, who is the assistant administrator of the TIFA and the assistant administrator of the Brownfield Redevelopment Authority. And we're lucky to have him here because this is a very important subject. Many of our taxpayers, they're saying, you don't have any money. How did you build that? I said, well, we didn't build it with your tax dollar. That new Justice Center sitting on the corner of Michigan Avenue and Beach Daily is $3 or $4 million, whatever that was, came from the TIFA district. So it didn't come from your tax dollar. And I thought you took it from my tax money. Now, what Tom is going to do, and we're only going to deal here now with the TIFA so we don't confuse anybody, is we just found out that the TIFAs are an outgrowth of the downtown development authorities that major cities have. Minor cities like Dearborn Heights, who are essentially bedroom communities, unlike Dearborn even, we are divided into essentially districts, but usually had to do with school districts. He's going to tell us how these things, how the TIFAs got started, what are their rules, regulations, stipulations, what do you have to do, what did the cities do in order to get this started, and a little bit how they work. We'll go into the specific projects later on. First, we're going to deal with their rules, regulations, stipulations, and how they came about. Tom?
Yeah, well, this state, you know, we had mentioned the DDAs came about first in, I believe it was 1975. After a time in the state, they realized, they said, well, what about those communities who don't have downtown areas? You know, Dearborn has a downtown, Plymouth has a downtown, but say a bedroom community like Dearborn Heights.
That's why I mentioned it,
yes. Yeah, it doesn't have a downtown. So the state, then one of the acts that they established was the Tax Increment Finance Authority Act, which it works very similar to a DDA, but it allows you to designate a geographic area of your city that perhaps has low property values and economic challenges that you want to address and try and improve the area. So they allowed the cities to designate in the 1980s, don't know the exact year, but in the early, I believe it was in the early 80s it started, where they could designate areas. And Dearborn Heights, what they did was they studied the area, and they could have set up the whole city as a TIFA, but what they wanted to do, they wanted to have community involvement. They didn't want to just, you know, dictate right away, because at the time it was controversial, because at the time they were taking school funds. The TIFAs had the right to capture school funds. So it was a controversial topic. So in Dearborn Heights, what they did was they decided to have public hearings in the various school districts and allow the school districts to decide whether or not the city should be a part of this.
Yeah, actually, let me interrupt for a minute. Dearborn Heights is a strange animal in that there are six school districts. The Dearborn District School District shares a part of Dearborn Heights, so the remaining five districts was the reason why they created the animal and then ended up saying, okay, which one of you districts want to participate in the TIFA? Mm-hmm. So you're going to explain that. Unfortunately, only one district decided to do it, and which is different than the city of Taylor, which the whole city of Taylor is a different district. Go. I'm sorry to interrupt. Okay. Continue with the rules, regulations, and stipulations.
Well, what they did was they went to the different school districts, and they asked them if they'd like to participate in this. There's three major school districts in Dearborn Heights, you know, located in Dearborn Heights. There was a lot of talk against it. The other school district, they never even responded.
Which one were these?
Oh, well, Crestwood School District, there was a lot of controversy. People were upset about it, so they never, I believe they didn't approve it.
Actually, probably was the best funded district,
though. Yeah, well, it was before the Heights Plaza was built, so we would have captured all the increment there, money that now goes to the state and county and whoever else, but, you know, that's hindsight now, but District 7 School District, which I think we're still waiting for the letter back from them, letting us know what they decided. But Westwood School District, the superintendent at the time was very forward-thinking. She thought, you know, she saw the good in this, because what the city did, where they
and
presented
they needed it more too, probably.
Well, it is, you know, it has its challenges in that area, and they saw that at the time. And what the city did was, though, they presented to all the school districts a plan that they would make them whole. Yes, the TIFA would collect a certain amount of money
of the
school tax at the time, of the school monies, but they told the school districts, hey, we'll give you back through, you know, things we can to make you whole, and then some. You would get extra money out of it, because the act allows you to give so much to schools and whatnot.
How could the city do that out of their general fund?
No, from the TIFA money. The TIFA can
support. Oh, from the TIFA money they took. Yeah. They said, we'll give you some back.
Okay. Yeah, they would give them all their money back plus some. Well, the Westwood School District supported the plan, so the TIFA was established within the boundaries of the Westwood School District, down south of
Michigan Avenue, and
west of Telegraph.
Everything west of Telegraph and south of Michigan Avenue.
Yep. So they went ahead and did that.
Would that be the poorest part of the city?
I wouldn't say that. I think, you know, a lot of areas have their challenges, but we do have a lot of low mod income census tracts in there.
In other words, the block grant program that works in low to moderate, a lot of that exists there.
Yeah, we have. I'd say maybe half of the district is low mod income right now, But that wasn't a requirement to have TIFA. But
I understand that. It just happens to be that half of the district of the TIFA district for the, what was it, the not the Wayne Westland,
Westwood.
Westwood School District.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
accepted the idea when it was school taxes that were taken.
Right, right.
Only.
Yeah, so, but over time, the school tax thing went away. The legislature changed the law so that you couldn't capture the school tax, which was fine with, you know, our TIFA.
How long ago was that?
I believe that was sometime in the early 90s.
Okay.
I want to say.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, because like I said, it was so controversial throughout the state that they changed the rules on that. But since then, you know, we capture certain millages.
Is that a lot more important than capturing all of the property tax? Instead of school tax only, is it more advantage for the TIFA?
Oh, we're capturing.
There's more money. There's more.
Oh, we're capturing all of it. All of it, anyway.
We're capturing all of it.
The property tax and the school tax. And so then the state exempted the school tax.
Okay, in the beginning, you were taking all of it.
Right. Right.
And then you exempted the school. Okay, I didn't quite understand that myself.
Yeah. So what it left leaves us with is basically the increments are money that would have gone to the state or the county.
Right. Let's talk about the rules and regulations of the TIFA.
When the TIFA was set up.
What do you got to do to get it?
Yeah. When the TIFA was set up, you come up with a plan, a master plan. Then the city puts down all its goals for the TIFA district, what it would like to fund, things like that, and that's presented at public hearings to the general public for comment. It was presented at city council meetings for city council approval. Then it's presented to all the taxing jurisdictions for their input. If they would like to be exempt, they could exempt themselves, ask to be exempt at that time.
Providing they had a good reason?
Yeah, I believe that's how it works. And then it goes to the state for approval. So there's a whole layer of, you know, approvals and input that go into it. And then this plan is basically your Bible for TIFA. It's if it's not in the plan, you can't do it. That's how what it comes down to.
So everybody's plan is slightly different.
Right, right. Depending on the needs of your area, you know, we have certain things in there. Like,
so when we included sewer and water line replacements, and some other place didn't. They didn't get the advantage of using TIFA money.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, so we have things like public infrastructure, things like parks and recreation, things like certain things for the police and fire, things like that.
So how about the authority? Are they set up the same? They have to be elected, appointed?
Well, the members of the authority, the TIFA board, are appointed by the mayor. There's only two things that the city really has involvement with in terms of administration of a TIFA. The first one is the mayor appoints members of our board, and then the second is we present.
For how long? 2 years, 4 years.
I believe it's 2 years, somewhere between 2 and 4 years. I'm still learning as we go through these processes, because that's something that comes up all the time. But what it is, he does.
Because I don't remember as a council member ever appointing anybody to the TIFA board.
Oh yeah, it's
doesn't mean it didn't happen. I just don't remember it.
Actually, I think it's on your next agenda. It's going to be coming
thinking.
Up. But then the other thing is we present our,
you know, the next agenda,
but I think we present our budget to the council each year,
right.
for approval. They can't make any changes. If they have any issues with anything, they have to send it back to the TIFA board for changes if they have concerns, which has never happened.
I have to stop and think about that.
Right. But it's good for checks and balances. It's there for, you know, openness and. So it's a good thing to have, but those.
How big is the TIFA budget? So the board is the board. How big is it usually? What was it last year in Dearborn Heights?
TIFA budget right now is running around $2.1 million. That's money. The money that's collected.
How does that go historically? Let's say 3 years ago.
Oh,
2 years ago.
Well, with the economic downturns, I'd say in 2000.
That's right. So
our
ability, our tax base went down.
Right, right. It was as high as, I'd say, at least $3 million. And over the past 6 years or so, you know, with the drop in the property values and whatnot, it went back down. because it uses the baseline,
okay.
1985.
So it's, how does the baseline work? They're saying the percentage of the can't be more than a percentage of the 1985 baseline?
Well, what it is when the TIFA was established, that's the baseline year. They said, okay, we're freezing the taxes that all the entities can take out of the TIFA district. So from 1985 on, whatever more monies are generated, that's what goes to TIFA. So that 1985 year is our baseline. So like right now, if our budget is at $2.1 million, we're bringing in $2.1 million in tax income than we were bringing in 1985.
Right.
So, and that goes up. So when the values go up,
and that's we referred benefit. To as the increment.
Right. So when values go up, we benefit. But when values go down, we're the ones who take the hit.
But when values went down, how did the TIFA have anything to collect? Because it didn't go down below the 1985 standard.
Right.
Well, we're at the midpoint of our program, and it's time for us to have a station ID and a PSA, whichever we like to do first, or whichever.
Just want to remind you folks, you're listening to the Dearborn Heights News and Views, and all the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, but we thank them for allowing us the expression of these ideas.
Henry Ford College gift cards are a great way to show your support for someone in your life who is seeking the skills necessary to fulfill their dreams. Available in values from $10 to $100, gift cards can be used towards payment of tuition, purchasing books and supplies, lab fees, or even a lunch at Skylight Cafe. Gift cards can be purchased at the campus bookstore or online at collegestore.hfcc.edu. College gift cards. What better way to encourage a student in your life than with an investment in their future?
And now we return to Dearborn Heights News and Views with your host, Dearborn Heights Councilman himself, Ned Apigian.
Thank you, Jay. I think we ought to remind the listeners that today's program has been pre-recorded. And if you ever want to listen to it ever again in the future, go on the internet and type in WHFR.FM. We're at 89.3 on your dial, and look for the button that says talk shows. Press that button, pick the date you're interested in the case of today's program, pick December the 30th from 1 to 2 o'clock, and tell your friends to listen if they want to find out about what the TIFA is and what the Brownsfield Redevelopment Authorities are. And that's what we're going to talk about now. Tom is also our guest, Tom Roscoe. He is the Assistant Administrator of the Dearborn Heights TIFA, and he's also the Assistant Administrator of the Brownsfield Redevelopment Authority. Now, in our last portion, we tried to define the rules, regulations about the TIFA. Hopefully have a better insight into what it does. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people sad that the other school districts by map area didn't approve the plan for themselves, that the Westwood School District and the people that reside in that area got all the advantages of having their streets paved better, their sewers replaced quicker and faster and better. And now we're going to find out about the Brownsfield Authority. Tom, give us the history and the requirements and the rules, the regulations and stipulations of the Brownsfield rules. Mm-hmm. Later we're going to talk about both projects in our fourth section. But
yeah, the Brownsfield Redevelopment Authority was created by state act, by the state of Michigan, to deal with contaminated properties around the state. There's a lot of old sites. Of course, you assume a gas station or a industrial site, but places like you might not suspect things like dry cleaners. Sometimes, in the old days, they would take the chemicals and dump them out the back door. And, there's a lot of contaminants in the soil there that can get into the water and whatnot, into the air. So there was a lot of sites around the state that they decided, we have to come up with a way to help people clean these up, because people aren't always motivated by what we call, the right thing to do. It comes down to the dollars and cents. So the state came up with a way to reimburse developers who weren't responsible. If somebody's responsible for a mess, it's, they're held to the accountability to clean it up. But if somebody
usually
comes,
they're long gone.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes they're long gone.
And corporations that have seen the better day.
Yeah, so the brownfield is really geared especially towards developers who come in and, say, buy an old dilapidated gas station that's been closed down for years. The soil's full of gasoline and whatnot. The brownfield mechanism is there for them to do the work and then get reimbursed.
Explain the mechanism. Explain the rule. When it came about, did it come out the same time as the TIFA in 1985 or later?
It came out later. I believe in the state, the Brownfield Act came out in the 90s sometime. What they did was that was when people started kind of waking up to these problems of contamination. And what they did was they set it up to where when you want to clean this up, you come to see a brownfield authority. Each city, we're citywide with a brownfield authority. It's not just in the TIFA district. It's throughout the city. And they come to see us.
Oh, that's...
And they can apply for
brownfield. That's true. I hadn't thought about that before.
Yeah, they can...
It has nothing to do with the TIFA district.
Right, it's completely separate. And what they can do is they can apply for funding reimbursement, which means they present their plan to us as to what they plan to do and how they plan to do it and how much it'll cost, and then we approve it. We send it between the city council and also the state. The state would approve the plan. And
well, before we get into that mechanism, I want to go into the establishment of it. There was a public act, and it said what? Define what? Who decides whether it's a brownfield?
Oh, well, the brownfield, there's state standards, like working with the DEQ. They have certain standards. Basically, if there's contamination of...
Just because it's a gas station, it's assumed it was contaminated.
No, you would do testing. You do testing and you find certain contaminants in the soil.
So a developer comes up to you wishing it's a brownfield site and he meets the requirement? Or he's just looking for a way to get some extra money.
Well, if he suspects it, if he suspects it's a brownfield site.
So it originates with him.
Yeah, yeah, we can't force anything.
So you can't define what are the 1, 2, 3s that the act asks for.
Well, contaminants. Contaminants are one. So that's the thing. They would come to us, and then part of the process is doing testing to see what's in the soil. And if it has any traces of anything, then it can qualify.
Who pays for the testing?
It would be part of the whole process. They pay
for
it.
So whatever the brownfield reimbursement is to the developer.
Mm-hmm. It could be a covered expense that they can get reimbursed for.
So who decides who it is? In your office?
Well,
you have
the
firms that do testing?
Well,
and
we
you
have
pass
a...
pass them out? You always give it to a...
Well, we have a consultant we work with, or if somebody has their own firm, there's a number of firms out there, we can work with them too. And what they do is they come in that now the state also, it's a good point to note now, recently the state amended the act to include a number of other things, not just actual contamination, but even blight. If you have an old warehouse that's falling apart and rusting and say a safety hazard, you can consider that a brownfield now. So they've really opened up the doors to what can be included in that. So there's a few different things now, avenues you can go to designate a brownfield.
Okay. So on the corner of Warren, there was a gas station that became a Tim Hortons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was one of our projects.
Right. It was one of your projects. Tim Hortons comes to you or the developer, who's a franchisee of Tim Hortons, says, I'd like to have that corner I believe it was a gas station, so therefore, what does he have to do? How do you decide how much money is allowed?
Well,
and how does it become a qualified brownfield?
Well, he came to us. We had a developer that bought the property. It was a closed down, vacant gas station where police were always being called for drug issues and other things. Really a safety hazard for the neighborhood. And a developer bought the property. He came to us and said, I've got this property. I've got somebody who wants to put a Tim Hortons here. Can we get some help? So, okay, well, let's take a look at it. He presented a plan to us. He said, okay, I'm investing this much money in soil removal and remediation and testing and cleanup. And we reviewed that and made sure what was eligible under the act for reimbursement. And then we presented it to the city council, and they approved the plan. And then we submit it to the state for approval.
So he, the developer says, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this, and this is going to cost me $300,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How much will you give me, he says?
Yeah, well, it's
back.
What it is, it depends on the activities. If they're qualifying activities and they're within a reasonable price.
How do you decide how much of that $300,000 you're going to give him back, and how do you give it back to him?
Well, it's like I said, it's the activities. There's certain things.
Is it after the fact, after he actually does it?
No, he has to get
when he does his financing. He has a 50% of that $300,000.
No, he has to get all the approvals before he does any work to make sure it's all on the up and up. And then what they do is they submit to us the paid receipts that they paid all the contractors and whatnot, and that it's all.
Does everything before he gets a dime.
Yes, yes. And then afterwards, we monitor it.
So how does he know he qualifies as a brownfield? That has to be determined first.
Yep. He has to submit all his plans to us, and then we approve certain amounts. We say, okay, you're submitting that you're going to spend $300,000 on these activities. They're all eligible according to the law. So when you're done, we'll start to reimburse you those amounts. And what
like
it is
finding new dirt, new sand to fill, mm-hmm. That's whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Meets the requirement. That's what I want to know was the state has certain requirements. Usually is taking away, how about disposing of the other soil?
Yep, disposal fees.
Who disposes it, the state or another private contractor?
No, he would hire somebody to take it to a licensed facility. To accept that kind of waste.
And what do they do with that kind of waste? They can't make it disappear.
No,
they burn it, they treat it. That's what I want the people to understand.
I believe it's landfills. You know, Michigan, we've got, because of the glacial till, we have a lot of
so it goes into another a special facility. A landfill that takes contaminated soil.
Yeah, because there are landfills out there that, you know, that because of like the clay and whatnot, it prevents it from seeping out into water sources.
Okay, I understand. All right.
Yeah. So after the fact, what they do is then when they're done, what we do is we pay them back based on tax increment financing. It's the same, again, it's the same type of method, but it's only from their money. So when, you know, they bought that property and it was worth next to nothing because it was a abandoned gas station.
Okay.
And so when they built this brand new Tim Hortons, it's a nice building. You know, obviously the tax goes up on it.
So let's make it easy for the listeners. Before we were getting $1,000 a year tax on a vacant property.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're getting $10,000 a year tax, mm-hmm. not on the building, on the property.
Right.
There's a $9,000 increment.
Exactly.
What happens?
And that $9,000 gets reimbursed to the developer.
For how many years?
Well, it depends
until
how we
it
set
reaches.
Up the plan. Depends on the plan. The plan can be set up to go so many years, and a lot of it depends on the value of the property. If the property's worth more, then they get more because they pay more taxes.
Well, what I'm trying to say, if you give him the increment of the value from when it was $1,000,
mm-hmm.
to what it is $10,000, the increment goes up every year. That dollar amount has to reach a certain amount. I remember on that project it was something like $120,000 or so. Mm-hmm. So he's getting back his own money.
Right. And
we the community are not getting that $120,000,
mm-hmm.
but and we're losing it, but presumably we're getting it back with the tax on the building.
Well, yeah, the idea is we're not losing it because we never had it, because it was just an abandoned gas station and it was there was nothing coming in anyway. So that's the concept there. Is
okay,
that you wouldn't have had it.
But when
anyway.
You pay taxes, you pay taxes on the property and the building.
Yes.
Does the increment have to do with the value of the building?
Yeah. It's the complete property tax.
It's the complete property tax. Okay, Jay, that's, I think we're ready for another station ID, unless you got a question on that interesting thing we just discovered.
No, I'd just like to hear exactly the specifics of your days, Tom. You work on different projects, so you must take a lot of meetings.
Well,
and so I guess
we
can cover that in the
we
last section.
We don't develop that many Brownsfield projects every day, either, maybe a couple a year or three or something.
Well, I'd just like to hear more details. For everybody that wants a career in this, we'll come back to it. So here's our last announcement.
We'll come back into individual projects after the station ID.
Yep, here we go.
Hey, knucklehead, what are you doing?
Just throwing away this old WHFR loyal listener guy.
Well, make sure you recycle it, lame brain.
I know.
Better yet, why not save a tree and sign up for the WHFR e-newsletter instead?
WHFR has an electronic newsletter?
Yeah, you just need to go to their website, pay attention when I'm talking to you, WHFR.FM, and hit the sign-up link. It has all the same bells and whistles of the paper newsletter.
Really?
Yeah, it's the most up-to-date WHFR info sent right to your email box. You got one of those, don't you?
Yeah, I got three of them.
Ah, you wise guy. Think about it.
Yeah. No more running up to the record store to get my copy and saving me on gas, too. Info sent right to my email box. That makes me very happy.
Well, okay, Mr. Happy. Let's go to WHFR.FM right now and sign you up.
Yeah, let's go do it.
It's informative, quicker, and easier on the environment. It's the WHFR electronic newsletter. Visit our website, WHFR.FM, and sign up today.
And now we return to the final segment for today's show of Dearborn Heights News and Views with your host, Councilman, Dearborn Heights Councilman Ned Apigian.
Thank you, Jay. And we had the good fortune today of letting our Dearborn Heights residents find out something about Brownfield Redevelopment Authority and the TIFA Tax Increment Finance Authority we have here. Thomas Roscoe, who is the assistant administrator of both. Hopefully you find this interesting and informative. There's always something I learn when I'm doing this. I suppose that's why I do it. It's an interesting way to me to find out what's going on. Now, Jay brought up an interesting question. We have these projects. Somebody comes up to you and says, we want to do this project, but I need this help. Every developer wants some sort of help. If he qualifies, we talked about how. Can you give us some examples? This is the time to give us examples and what those examples cost us, what we gained. For example, we had enough money in the TIFA to build the police court. And everything that we had came from the TIFA. Mm-hmm. There was nothing there. The attitude is there was nothing on that corner. We weren't generating any money. But that's a municipal facility. There's no increment. It doesn't pay taxes. Can you answer the ones that do?
Well, that falls under the TIFA. When we were talking before about the brownfield, you know, it's kind of different. We wear two different hats.
Give one example of each so we can cover it in our last 10 minutes.
Okay, well, Brownfield, like the Tim Hortons is kind of, you know, like we brought up earlier, that's a good example where we had a dilapidated gas station. It was not just an eyesore, but, you know. But
let's go to the next one. Greenfield, you have the Telegraph and Van Born.
Oh, Telegraph and Van Born. We had Walgreens.
The Walgreens. Mm-hmm.
Yep, there was an old car repair shop or something that had horribly contaminated the soil. So it was, you know, kind of a minimal use of the property. So in order to clean up that area.
So that would be a brownfield project.
Yep, okay. They did a brownfield project there. So Walgreens came in, and we just finished reimbursing them because they had a 5-year, I believe it was a 5 or 7 year plan.
Okay. So they got the money for 5 or 7 years.
Yep.
And they're reaching the end of that.
Yeah, we finished because there was a time cap, so they didn't make all their money back. They know that going into it, that there's a chance because the way the property values dropped, they paid less taxes, so they only get so much back. Then.
They're not guaranteed to get all their taxes back. It's only a percentage, isn't it? Percentage of their expenditures.
Plus the interesting thing then with them too is, you know, the developer sold the property to somebody else, and that person kept appealing the taxes and dropping the taxes even more, so the developer was losing out. But you know, when they sell it, they make their money back in the sale price. So they told me that once, the one I talked to, he says,
"But the city is made whole because we, after their period of their tax exemption,
we not only get the taxes, but we've got a place that hires people,
right?
Puts people to work as a
benefit." Let's go back into the money we get from the TIFA that fixes the sewers and paves streets. That's not taxable money we were going to get. How does it?
Well, what it does is
we have the benefit of not using general funds to make the improvement.
Right. It helps. It helps the city in that it's money that would have gone elsewhere to like state and county entities, taxing jurisdictions, and that's where the state recognized that, hey, these areas are in need of help. We'll let them keep some of their money that they're able to generate. So it goes back into projects like the Parks and Recreation, certain things, for like Daly Park, we have in the TIFA district.
Now, when you say you have $2 million, you have $2 million to use this year.
Yes, that's our budget. Now, the key to that is, though, that like you mentioned before, the Justice Center, the bonds on that are about $1.5 million a year that we have to pay. It's bonded.
That's right. We pay part. The city fund pays part.
Right.
You pay a portion.
Well, we pay for. Yeah.
How did you decide what the portion was that TIFA pays?
TIFA pays all of it. We pay the bonds on the Justice Center completely.
Yeah, but you're not going to have any money to do that. The last time we were talking about, there's going to come a time.
Well, it's getting close. That's the trouble with the dropping property values. Because the Justice Center alone is $1.5 million, and then the JFK Library, that's when we pay a percentage of. I believe it's.
Okay, so the library is the one that you pay a percentage of.
Yeah.
So, but when you don't have anything, when your budget is not $2 million, it's $1 million, then stuck.
What happens is the city ends up having to take on the bonds, the responsibilities. So that's, luckily we're not at that point yet. We've been weathering out this storm pretty well with the property values. But that's where, there's been some challenges in Lansing recently, you might have seen in the news, where some representatives from some county up God knows where says, oh, we don't like TIFAs and DDAs, we just want to eliminate them all. And then all those bonds would fall on all the local communities.
The legislature is going to do that.
Well, it fell apart. Luckily.
We don't know yet. The next legislature is going to be worse.
Well, from what we hear,
Jay, you got a question you can ask, an important question about this. I'm sure you're interested.
Well, not about the legislature, we won't get the final story maybe until tomorrow in terms of lame duck. But then, yeah, the new legislature, who knows? I was just interested that from day to day. I mean, what's a typical day in your life as a TIFA administrator? You just get paperwork coming in and you send paperwork out. Do you go out and take meetings?
That's actually kind of the thing I like about this job. It's varied. We work with some numbers here and there, on the different projects, but also involves meeting with people on potential projects, going out and working with even the community. We have a neighborhood association in our district that started. And we try
Southwest
to work with them,
Dearborn.
Southwest Dearborn Heights Neighborhood Association. And what we try to do is we try to be an intermediary to help, not just to be a funding mechanism, because a lot of cities have TIFAs and they just kind of use them as a little bank, so to say. I guess that's, without being judgmental of how they do things. But we try to be a little more active and try to be a, a point where citizens can come to us, you know, like the neighborhood group can come to us and say, we're having a, we have this idea, or we're having a difficulty with something. What can we do? Can you help us in terms of pointing us in the right direction?
So they meet on the third Thursday of the month in the Donovan VFW post. You go there and explain to them about the TIFA?
Sometimes. Sometimes we don't get to every meeting, but we keep contact with the president and the board members, and they come to our TIFA meetings, and we try to help out with that. And also, working with the city, we help with the different, we have good relationships with all the city departments, because, you know, they can only do so much attention in one area at one time. So we kind of are the extra eyes
and
ears.
Well, they're looking for funding in issues that relate to where the, in that part of the city that has the TIFA district.
That's part of it, but also, you know, like we work with well with the ordinance department that we have now. We keep in contact. If we see things, we share it with them. We help to fund an ordinance officer.
I was going to say, what? Oh, okay.
So you know, different things.
We have an extra ordinance officer, so the TIFA, and he has to work in the TIFA district.
Yep. So, you know, we keep good relationships.
Is there
with
something you can't do with the TIFA money? You're hiring people?
We're
fixing the library?
We can't just give money to, like, say, if a department or whatever said, hey, just give us money towards our budget or something for general use. We can't do that. It's very specific things in our budget that we can give money towards. Like, we just had a tree trimming project. I mean, it's something minor, but it helps, you know, to put $25,000 towards trimming the trees to help. So when the power lines.
So what you do during you interview tree cutting, you decide which are the trees.
No, we actually.
Who decides who needs the trimming?
Well, we work with DPW.
DPW.
Yeah, we work with DPW, and they have their contractors. So we put together a plan for work in the TIFA district, and they'll do the plan, and we pay for it. So, yeah, that's. But in terms of the other time, you know, we have a lot of people. You know, we have our administrator.
Do you have something written that you'd like to say finally to sum up listeners' experience with TIFA? Brownfield, because we got 2 minutes.
Okay. Just want to say, you know, we're there. We're always working for Dearborn Heights, kind of in the background. We may not always be in the forefront of things, but we're always there working with. The various projects, which can be one day one thing and one day the next. It takes us in so many directions. Like I said, we have our administrator, Carmen Oliveira, our office secretary, Chris Hodgins, who have a lot of experience with the city, and we have a board that we have to thank that's very knowledgeable, very interested in the city and helping the city. So they dedicate a lot of their time.
I'd like to ask just finally, Tom, what's the primary source of the projects for the TIFA? Would you say it comes from people that run businesses that are thinking of things, or does it come from, like you said, community groups like neighborhood associations?
First and foremost, it comes from our TIFA plan. You know, there's certain things in the plan that says we can do. So we get the input like from we talk with the business people and the neighborhood residents, and we get input from them as to where to focus.
And tell our listeners how people can get in touch with you.
Best way is visit our website, which is www.tifadh.com, and it has information about us and what we're doing, and important links within the city that the residents can find helpful.
And your office is in City Hall?
No, our office is actually in the Justice Center.
Justice Center.
Yep.
So
where they deal out justice.
It's got to be a big, fair. Equal opportunity activity, right?
Definitely.
Near the police.
Okay.
Well, we'd like to close our program reminding you that you could listen to us on the fifth Tuesday of any month the fifth Tuesday falls on, and you can hear us between 1 and 2 on WHFR 89.3 FM, and of course, on the internet, WHFR.FM. Look for the talk show button. Put in the month, the date that you know is the fifth Tuesday, and you'll hear the program you're interested in. Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Tom, for being here.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
WHFR Dearborn, happy holiday season from our family to yours right here at WHFR Radio. It is a pleasure to serve our community. We are celebrating the start of our 30th year in December, and we are so excited to be a special part of your day, your evening, and whatever you do. Take us with you right here, WHFR at Henry Ford College Radio. You can listen on the web at WHFR.fm and find so many other interactive opportunities, whether it's finding out a particular piece that you'd like to get the name of, or perhaps you'd like to connect to a DJ on a specific radio show throughout our broadcast day. Whatever the case, check out that website, whfr.fm. If you're so inclined to make a contribution to keep up what we're doing and keep it going forward, you're welcome to do that as well. Lots of opportunity there. So happy birthday to WHFR this December, and thank you for being with us.
Apollo's Fire is a Baroque orchestra based in Cleveland, but they also have sort of a folk music division as well.